Well, good morning. It's good to see everybody here this morning on this cold, wintry morning. This is a little unusual for us down here in Texas, but it makes us appreciate the guys that have to deal with this on a regular basis. We do have a number of visitors with us this morning, even though our numbers are down, and we certainly want to welcome you and would encourage you to participate in our class this morning. We are continuing our study of the book of Ecclesiastes. This morning, we're going to be looking at the vanity of the pursuit of pleasure. In this series so far, we have looked at a couple of things that Solomon tried to find happiness or satisfaction or meaning as he tried to figure out what the meaning of life was. We looked at the vanity of the pursuit of wealth. We also looked at the vanity of the pursuit of wisdom. Last week, Jacob did a wonderful job on the third chapter of Ecclesiastes, dealing with the time and season for all things, and certainly appreciate him taking the class for me last week. This will be our last series in this section of the study of the book that we're talking about the vanity of the pursuit of different things. Next week, as you're reading through the book and getting prepared for the class, I want to look at the frustrations that Solomon experienced with looking at the inequalities of life, the things in life that are not fair. So as you look at the book next week, as you're reading through the book, try to pick out and identify those things that would fall into that category of life is just not fair. And we'll talk about those things next week. Before we get into our study this morning, we're going to ask Marshall to lead us in a word of prayer.
Our Heavenly Father, as we come before you now, we thank you for this opportunity that we have to gather again together and study another portion of your word. We ask as we are about to go through this study that the speakers may have a ready recollection of everything they have prepared and that we may all listen with open hearts and pay attention to what is presented, that we may apply it to our everyday lives. Please be with us throughout our study. Forgive us of our sins. In Christ's name, amen.
All right. So this morning, as we have already stated, we're going to look at, you know, Solomon had already tried to see if he could be happy in the pursuit of wealth, and we looked at a lot of the frustrations that he experienced as he did that. We looked at his pursuit of wisdom, and this morning we want to look at his pursuit of pleasure. He said there in chapter 2 and verse 1, I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself. Do you think that we as modern Americans enjoy the pursuit of pleasure? I think we're going to, as we look at this thing, we're going to see that we try to do all the things that Solomon did. This idea of enjoy yourself, I mean, the expression, you know, living for the weekend, you know, so that you can enjoy yourself, or looking to enjoy yourself on some kind of a special vacation or something along those lines. So, for topic of discussion, what kind of avenues did Solomon seek to enjoy himself? How did he test pleasure? Any thoughts? What did he try? Steve?
Wine.
Okay. We'll talk about that. What else?
Wives.
Wives. Okay. Anything else?
Great works.
Great works. Okay. Another avenue. Solomon looked at all of these things, so let's look at a few. The first one he did was this idea, he says, I'll test myself with mirth and laughter. And he says, I said of laughter, it is madness, and of pleasure, what does it accomplish? So the very first thing that Solomon did was, let's try laughter. Let's see if that's happy. Life is one big party. Solomon's daily portion, you know, if we look at that, Steve, will you read 1 Kings 4, verses 22 through 28?
Verse 1 Kings chapter 4, verses 22 through 28. And Solomon's provision for one day was 30 measures of fine flour and 70 measures of meal, 10 fat oxen and 20 oxen out of the pastures, and 100 sheep besides harts and roebucks and fallow deer and fatted fowl. For he had dominion over all the region on this side of the river, from Tifsa even to Azza, over all the kings on this side of the river. And he had peace on all sides round about him. And Judah and Israel dwelt safely, every man under his vine and under his fig tree, from Dan even to Beersheba, all the days of Solomon. And Solomon had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots and 12,000 horsemen. And these officers provided victual for King Solomon and for all that came into King Solomon's table, every man in his mouth. They lacked nothing. Barley also, and straw for the horses and dromedaries, brought they unto the place where the officers were, every man according to his charge.
Okay, if you can think about as you try to absorb what Solomon's daily portion looked like, you know, it was an all-day, 24-hour buffet, all day, every day. You know, a lot of us, you know, as we have gone through the holiday season, we have probably sat down to some very delightful meals, you know, some, you know, wonderful feast. But if you can imagine, that was every day for Solomon. You know, he had a feast every day. And he said, a feast is made for laughter and wine makes merry. You know, if you can think about, you know, we've gone through these holidays these last, you know, 7-10 days, something like that. You know, after doing all of that, most of us are ready to kind of settle back into a normal life. But for him, that was an everyday event. You know, some of the commentators I read that said that it was not uncommon for Solomon to feed 30,000 people a day. And in the reading there, it talks about that they lacked for nothing. I mean, he tested life. So all of those good things that, you know, we enjoy from a dietary standpoint, you know, from a gathering of people, that was an everyday event for Solomon. And he said, I said of laughter and madness and pleasure, it is madness. And a pleasure, what does it accomplish? So can you imagine life as one continual feast or party? I mean, is that where happiness is going to occur? Do you think you might get tired of that? John? Who's got the mic? He's coming.
Basically, happiness comes from the search for it. We're never satisfied. Once we find it, once we get whatever it is we think's going to make us happy, it doesn't make us happy anymore. We've got to find something else to make us happy, and that's what Solomon found out. He got, he enjoyed, but the enjoyment was short-lived. Mm-hmm. And that's human nature, and we're guilty of the same thing. Had a preacher tell me one time, he said, happiness really comes in the finding.
In the finding.
But once you find it, you got to find something else because it's not going to continue. So it's just a constant search. And that's the reason people can't be satisfied. That's the reason we can't be satisfied. We just keep looking.
Mm-hmm. So if we talk about life being one continual feast, I think all of us can understand that the answer is not there. That's not where he found it. So the next thing that Steve alluded to was that Solomon tried to find satisfaction through artificial stimulants. And in particular, in Solomon's case, you know, he tried wine. Is that where it's at? No, I see some heads nodding no. He said, I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine while my mind was still guiding me wisely. So Solomon tried what a lot of people try, In his day, you know, the artificial stimulant of the day was wine. In our day, we have probably expanded that particular artificial stimulants to a lot of other things, certainly wine, you know, or alcohol in general. There are other things like intoxicants, like, you know, drug use and other things along those lines. But, you know, as Solomon did that, he said, I did that and I still maintained my wisdom. All right, we're stuck here. There we go. He also had to say some other things that, you know, he learned some lessons from this. If you look at Proverbs, the 20th chapter in verse 1, it says, wine is a mocker, strong drink is a brawler, and whatever whoever is led astray by it is not wise. So Solomon concluded that the pursuit of wine or artificial stimulants was not wise. He says, do not gaze at wine when it's red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it goes down smoothly. In the end, it bites like a snake and poisons like a viper. So Solomon tried that, and his conclusion was, well, that's not the answer. Do you think people have a problem with this today? Do you think members of the church have a problem with this? I think absolutely so. There are people that think that, you know, I can chase this, I can dabble in this, and yet Solomon says it's not wise, it's not foolish. You know, and if you can't understand what we've talked about, that Solomon was one of the wisest men that ever walked the face of the earth, or was the wisest man, and if he says that the pursuit of wine and, you know, artificial stimulants is not wise, then we probably ought to listen to him. There was an interesting quote from F. Scott Fitzgerald. It says, first you take a drink, and then the drink takes a drink, and then the drink takes you. You know, one of the things we're going to talk about in the class this morning is, you know, some of the addictive characteristics sometimes of some pleasure has. And we certainly know that alcohol and you know, other stimulants can be very addictive. Another thing that Solomon tried that John alluded to was these grand building projects. You know, we talked about this a little bit in our class on the pursuit of wealth, but he says there in chapter 2 and verse 4 through 6, he says, I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself, and I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. Solomon put together some pretty impressive works that his hand found to do. I mean, we, you know, can talk about some of the houses that he built, his palace. You know, we could certainly talk about the temple. You know, he could stand back and he could look at that and think, that is a grand thing. You know, it talked about his fountains and his gardens, you know. All of those things Solomon built, and as he looked at those things, he found pleasure in that. But was it lasting? Was that where satisfaction was? Do we have satisfaction in, or lasting satisfaction in, you know, trying to find it with things that we build? I mean, it kind of falls into the same category that, you know, it's just not lasting. You know, we talked about in one of our previous classes, you know, how many of us have gone through our lives and we buy homes, and when we first buy them, we think that this is grand, I'm happy, and what happens? What else?
Well, bigger and better.
Bigger and better. So at some point, the newness wears off, the air conditioner goes out, you know, and, well, it's time for a new house. It's something for grander, you know, bigger, fancier. And Solomon did all of those things, and he, you know, at the end of the day, he said, you know, I'm not satisfied with that. You know, I can look on that, but it just does not bring me lasting pleasure. pleasure. Another thing that Solomon looked at was this idea of status. It says, I bought male and female slaves, and I had homeborn slaves. Also, I possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. So Solomon, you know, he had lots of herds. When we read his daily portion, you know, 100 sheep a day just to cover his table. Just an amazing amount of herds and wealth that Solomon accumulated. He accumulated the special treasure of kings. So if you have a big pile of treasure like that, what does it do for you? I mean, do you go into your little dragon's hoard and sit around and play in it? Does that bring satisfaction? Well, Solomon found that that was not the answer for him, that did not bring lasting satisfaction. Another thing that we've talked about is that Solomon tried this idea of sensuality. He says, I provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasures of men, many concubines. How many wives and concubines did Solomon have?
I think it was
700 and 300. If you read 1 Kings 1 through 3, now Solomon loved many foreign women. He had 700 wives, princesses, and there in 300 concubines, 1,000 women. Did that bring Solomon pleasure? Y'all are awful quiet this morning. Probably brought him a lot of problems. We know that it did. In fact, we know that those wives in his older age turned away his heart. And that created some serious problems for Solomon. But once again, you know, here's a guy that had it all. You know, he had all the wealth that you could have. He had, you know, all the food that you can enjoy. You know, he tested, you know, artificial stimulants. He had a harem of women. And yet, once again, Solomon did not find that these things brought him lasting joy. Another thing that Solomon tried was this idea of living the good life. Somebody tell me what the good life is. You know, that's a very common expression in our modern day vernacular. Somebody try to paraphrase what that might look like.
It's sort of like, you know, having like a lakefront home and going out and, you know, skiing and stuff out in the water all the time, especially in warmer places. Just a lot of pleasure like that. Things. That's what I think of almost automatically when I think of living a good life.
Okay. Anybody else have any thoughts on what the good life is? Mary? Yeah. We actually, you know, look at that. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. Can you imagine? Anything that your eye desired, Solomon got it. What do you think about that? Anybody think that that would be lasting happiness? John?
We get caught up in the idea of being happy, except we don't know what happiness is. And we keep thinking if we keep trying, we'll find it. And we keep failing. And Solomon finally concluded at the tail end of this book, fear God and keep his commandments and you'll be happy. Happiness is a fleeting thing. And if we're honest with ourselves, we can be happy. but it's not in chasing all the things that the world throws out there that tells you it will make you happy.
What is a common denominator among, you know, a lot of the people that we see portrayed before us in our modern media? You know, people that perhaps have great wealth and that they can, anything that their eye desires, you know, what's the common thread with most of those people? Most of them, by and large, are not very happy people. Most of them, by and large, are very spoiled people that they do not really understand, you know, how to, you know, be satisfied and be thankful for the things that you have. You know, all you have to do is turn on the television, you know, pick up a newspaper, and you're going to find some famous celebrity that has committed suicide or, you know, has checked into some rehab center because they have, you know, abused those things to the point that, you know, they did not find lasting happiness. And that's exactly the same thing that Solomon found. You know, this idea that we have that, you know, the good life is good. You know, maybe it's sitting on the beach, you know, and watching a sunset on a remote tropical island. You know, maybe that's your idea of the good life. Everything that Solomon did to pursue this idea of pleasure, everything that you can read about in this book, as we've talked about, was a very worldly pursuit. Life under the sun, and we've talked about that, and it was a worldly perspective. Cole?
Yeah, I was going to say, and you may be getting to this, and something I think about Solomon and him, the pursuit of pleasure, I think sometimes it's okay to have pleasure, because in my opinion, I think there are things that are pleasurable about this life, and I think Solomon even attests that. You know, it's beautiful in its time, is what he states several times. And so that being said, I think there are good things and we should definitely enjoy those things, but it's when you're just solely pursuing those things that's when it's wrong, right?
Exactly. Well, if we look at what John has to say, you know, along these ideas of this worldly perspective, it says, "Do not love the world, nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life, is not from the Father, but is from the world." So Solomon, in his pursuit of satisfaction, while on this earth, under the sun, he pursued everything from a worldly perspective. And if you think about everything that we've talked about so far this morning, does it not fall into one of these categories? The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the vainglory of life. I mean, we understand that lust is a desire, a strong desire for something, an inordinate desire for something. In fact, so that you desire it so much, it's really not even healthy. But if we looked at some of the things that Solomon did, you know, under the lust of the flesh, certainly his idea of sensuality, you know, with, you know, the thousand wives, you know, anytime you talk about lust of the flesh, that's normally what comes to mind is something along those lines. You know, artificial stimulants, mirth, all of those things that gratify and satisfy the flesh, you know, fall into this category that, you know, Solomon tried. You know, the lust of the eyes. We talked about this building project, you know, these grand things that Solomon built. His ability to just look out upon that thing, all those things that he had done, and draw satisfaction. And there is a sense in which we can derive, you know, godly pleasure from our work and things like that, and we will certainly talk about that. But, you know, it was the lust of the eyes. It's what pleased his eyes. And there's this vainglory of life, this idea of status and the good life. You know, as Solomon pursued these things, he did it with this perspective of under the sun, this worldly perspective. So Cole kind of brought up this idea, so what is pleasure, and is pleasure a bad thing? Should we not enjoy pleasure? Is that bad?
God tells us we should enjoy the fruits of our labors.
Okay. So, pleasure is God-given. It is one of the things that, one of the emotions, one of the parts that make up every human is this idea of understanding and experiencing pleasure. It was given by God. So, if it's given by God, can we say that it's a bad thing? Absolutely not. God intended, when He created this world, He created it for man. And everything He put in this world, He put for man, for his benefit, for his, sustaining him. So God expects and built into us this idea that pleasure is a good thing. But like many things that God has provided, He regulates what is good and what are the parameters. Cynthia?
God gave parameters for the kings when when the people came into the promised land. He knew that they would establish a king. And in Deuteronomy 17 and 14, he said, when you come to the land which you shall possess and say, I will set a king over me like all the nations around me, he set parameters about what they should and should not do. And he said, you should not multiply horses for yourself. You shall not multiply wives for yourself or multiply silver and gold for yourself. Well, that didn't last very long. He's only the third king. And in 1 Kings 10 and 11, it talks about how he built his two houses. And then he built storehouses, how he multiplied his flocks of animals. And talk about that, complete abuse of the what he was able to possess.
Absolutely right. God gives good gifts to man. But the abuse of any gift, and it does, you take your pick, it doesn't matter what it is, the abuse of it is not a good thing, and it can become destructive. If you talk about food, food is a good thing, but the abuse of it can become very destructive. It can hurt our health. Work. The very first thing that God set man to do was to work. God intended that man work. And yet, we can abuse that. We can become, quote-unquote, workaholics, that is the sum total of everything that we exist for, and it can become very destructive. So much to the point that we can sacrifice family, we can sacrifice our health. Anything that we abuse can become destructive. So we've already alluded to this, but is pleasure different than happiness? Yes. Okay, so happiness, if you look up a definition of it in, the dictionary, it says happiness is used in the context of mental or emotional states, things that make us happy. And it can include positive or pleasant emotions ranging from contentment to intense joy. If you experience contentment, can you be happy? Absolutely. If you experience some intense joy, can you be happy? Absolutely. Pleasure is different in that pleasure is an experience that makes you feel good. Okay? So what happens in our brain when we experience pleasure? Anybody have any thoughts on that or done any study on that? Well, in preparation for this, I read a really good article, and I found it kind of humorous that the author's name was Lustig. That, you know, but he wrote a really good article, and some of the points that we'll have in here came from his article. It says, when we experience pleasure, there's a chemical that's released in our brain. It's called dopamine. And dopamine is the reward neurotransmitter that tells our brains, this feels good, and I want more. Yet too much dopamine leads to addiction. So when we experience some kind of pleasure, and you take your pick, it doesn't matter that this chemical is released in our brain, this dopamine, and it makes us feel good. And anything that feels good, don't we normally want more of that? I mean, sure. I mean, if it felt bad, if it was painful, we probably wouldn't want more of it. But if it feels good, you know, there's this incentive. Well, you know, I'd like to experience that again. There's another chemical that's released in our brain, and that's called serotonin. And serotonin is the contentment neurotransmitter that tells our brains, this feels good, I have enough, I don't want any more. Too little serotonin can lead to depression. Okay, too much dopamine can lead to addiction. You need to have a healthy balance of both. And, you know, this idea that, okay, we've talked about, you know, the holiday feast, you know, if you sit there and you've had a plate full of really good food, your brain says, well, that was really good, but I've had enough, you know, and I need to pull away. And, you know, that's what happens when serotonin is released in our brain. But think about it, in our present world, it is a very pleasure-oriented society. And simple pleasures have morphed into something else. A 6.5-ounce soda has morphed into a 32-ounce Big Gulp, and I'm pretty sure that if you go to a convenience store that they make them a lot bigger than 32 ounces now. You know, and so, you know, once again, something that's simple, that was a pleasurable thing, well, it felt good, so maybe I need some more of that. And we know all of the problems that we have in our society because of the abuse of, you know, something as simple as a soda. What about the enjoyment that happens when we have an afternoon with friends? Is that an enjoyable experience? Absolutely. We all like that social aspect of having a group of people together. But in our society, we've kind of morphed into something else, and we have this thing, you know, that afternoon with friends, that social one-on-one interaction that we have, it's morphed into having 1,000 friendlings on Facebook. And we get our charge of dopamine every time we post something and we get a like, you know, that little chemical goes off and says, well, this is good. And so we find that we have, in many cases, substituted something that was a simple pleasure, and it has been abused to the point that, by and large, we have a society full of people that really do not know how to interact with each other. I mean, it's been abused. And it's created its own set of problems in our society. If you think about pleasure, each momentary pleasure is just that. It lasts for a moment. It is not lasting. And even something that might last for a very short period of time, you know, it doesn't last. You know, we talked about the idea of the houses. That, you know, when we buy our first home, you know, we're excited and we think that's you know, the end all. That is lovely. And yet, it wears off. And that momentary pleasure that we've got from that, you know, we have to provide another one in order to get our fix of dopamine. And in our world that we live in, we have this chronic problem with this pursuit of pleasure. We need that fix, and you know, if we keep getting that fix, then, you know, there's this balancing act between dopamine and serotonin. You get one out of whack. If you get too much dopamine, you get addiction. If you get too much serotonin, you get depression. And I don't know about y'all, but in my lifetime, you know, we have come to a point that, you know, things like depression, that is an everyday thing that, you know, we hear about. You know, you can go to your doctor and you can get antidepressants. You know, we have special professionals that help people that are suffering from depression. And I don't know if depression has been around forever, but I do know that in my lifetime it has become something that we have certainly become more aware of, and something that, you know, our society has had to struggle with. And it really comes down to this idea of, you know, the pursuit of pleasure. And many times, you know, it doesn't matter. You can take any one of these, whether it's sugar, tobacco, alcohol, drugs, social media, porn, you know, anything. You know, there are ever available temptations in our world for this pursuit of pleasure. And this idea, the more pleasure that you seek, the more unhappy you get, and the more likelihood of addiction or depression. It's just this vicious cycle. And Solomon certainly figured that out when he said, you know, that the pursuit of pleasure, you know, was madness. Think about what happens with cocaine use. And, you know, the first time, from everything that I have read about it, is you get the most euphoric high the first time you use cocaine. And it is an extremely addictive drug, so that you want to experience that again, so you try it again. But in order to get somewhere close to that same high, you have to increase the dosage, the frequency. You know, it just takes more and more, and even doing that, you never ever get to the point that you experience that very first time. And then it doesn't take very long until a person is addictive, and it absolutely can destroy their lives. This idea that our ability to perceive happiness has been sabotaged by the quest of pleasure, is that a fair statement? It is absolutely a fair statement. If your entire goal in life is to get pleasure, that I need that next fix. And it, you know, maybe it's something as innocent as a hobby that you have. You know, maybe you're a thrill seeker. It always takes something bigger the second time to get that same thrill. You know, whether it's jumping out of the plane, or, you know, bungee jumping, or whatever it would be, or racing, or whatever the case is. Those people who abdicate happiness for pleasure will end up with neither. And that, you know, if we look at Solomon's life, I think that's a fair statement of what he concluded, was that, you know, he tried to find happiness through pleasure, and at the end of the day, he wasn't satisfied with either one. So is the pursuit of pleasure addictive? Well, it can be. Certainly in the case of artificial stimulants, you know, but there's other things too. You know, food, thrill-seeking, sensual things like fornication or porn, hobbies. You know, if that is where you are constantly looking, you can get addicted to that, and it can absolutely ruin your life. So Solomon, like in his pursuit of wealth and his pursuit of wisdom, he found some problems with that, and he talks about it. Number one, there's never enough. Every time you get pleasure, it's never enough. It doesn't last, so we got to go chase some more to get it. The eye is not filled with seeing, or the ear with hearing. Certainly, that concept can apply to this pursuit of pleasure. There's also this idea that Solomon had that there was nothing new. You know, you can try it all, but at the end of the day, all right. Can somebody reset that? Something went wrong. There we go. There's no lasting profit for momentary pleasure. We talked about that pleasure is momentary. It doesn't last. So it just, it goes on and on. So, as we've done in every class, let's consider a heavenly perspective. So if the answer is, if pleasure is not the answer to lasting happiness and satisfaction, where does it fit into our lives? We've already said that pleasure is God-given. It's something that he created for the benefit of man. And so if that's the case, where should it fit in? I think we all understand this idea of balance. That, you know, in our life, you cannot be top-heavy in any area. You know, if your pursuit is always for the pursuit of pleasure, that creates a problem. You're going to sacrifice something. If your pursuit is always the pursuit of wealth, you're going to sacrifice something. It's out of kelter. And so there has to be a balance between pleasure and contentment. And there is actually quite a lot that is stated about contentment. But one of the things that we can do to help that is to be thankful. If you think about it, there are many, many things that we should be thankful for every day. You know, a good meal. And Solomon talks about that in the book of Ecclesiastes. There is nothing better for a man that he should enjoy the fruit of his labor. And so, you know, a good meal, a comfortable bed, appreciation for the beauty of God's creation. You know, we can go out and we can sit on that beach or we can gaze upon that mountain and we can see that and we can derive great pleasure from what our eyes see. But especially we can enjoy that in the context of appreciation of what God has created for us and a thankfulness for that. How about, you know, being thankful for a loving spouse and your family? You know, you can have great pleasure just being around your family. And that is a gift from God. We can take satisfaction in our labor. You know, we've talked about the fact it really doesn't matter. Whatever you do it with all your might. Solomon talks about that in this book. You know, if you're mowing your grass, do it with all your might. Do the very best job you can. And then you can turn around and look at it, and you can draw great satisfaction from what you've done. It's the gift of God. And then you can pick 1,000 different daily blessings that God bestows on each of us. You know, all day long, every day of our life, if we take time and we think about it, you know, we can derive great pleasure just from being thankful for the things that God has given us. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. Take delight in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. If we will apply that, we can apply, you know, great contentment to our lives. You know, trust in God. He's going to give us everything that we need. Enjoy the blessings that he has for us. And take delight in the Lord, and he will give us every desire of our heart. So we need to learn to be content. This, in Timothy, we're told, but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we should be content with that. Do you think that for most people, you have to learn how to be content? Absolutely. Contentment for most people. Now, I know a few people in my life that are just naturally content, and they are blessed people, you know. But for most of us, we have to learn how to be content. It says, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have, because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. You know, be content with the idea that God is going to take care of us. If we put our trust in him, he'll take care of us. You know, we read passages that talk about, you know, I've never seen God's people beg bread. God will take care of us if we just learn to be content and trust in him. It says, take pleasure in the simple things of life and accept the pleasure within the parameters of holiness. Don't make pleasure our end goal. I think that's what Solomon found out in his pursuit of pleasure, and we will pick up there next week. Thank you very much.